Hello, fellow fiends. Welcome to season 6, episode 1 of Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces. I am your host, Cassiopeia, and I am so excited to be back. I have tried to start this season a couple of times over the past month, and life has gotten in the way just about every time. I got sick. I just didn't have the time. I was working more. But I'm so excited to be back and bringing you the creepiest and the spookiest content. Also, Happy New Year! Woohoo! Yay! 2024! I guess I'm looking forward to the new year. I know everybody kind of goes into the new year with like, yeah, this is going to be my year. And I'm just going in just like, you know what, whatever comes my way, comes my way. But so just to get the business side out of the way, don't forget, you can catch me every Friday with new episodes. And if you subscribe to the Patreon or the anchor.fm website for as little as $5 a month, you actually get bonus episodes every other Tuesday. You get a special thank you call out on a future episode, or multiple future episodes. Who knows? We'll see how I'm feeling. You get a welcome box that has a couple of little Creepy Cases candle, maybe Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces candles, depending on which tier you sign up with, stickers, keychains, some little goodies. You never know what might be in that swag box, but definitely check that out. And I do understand that sometimes people would like to support, but they don't really have the money or the budget at the moment to subscribe. But I do have a Cash App and a Venmo, and you can always, you know, just send dollar here, dollar there. That helps as well. A lot of people don't think a dollar, oh, why should I? You know, it's not going to make a difference. It does. You can also head over to pizzaandpigtails.com and hit the Wiccan Fae shop, and there's merchandise for Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces. There's the candles, any of the Wiccan Fae candles also. And if you subscribe, you actually get a 10% discount code that is good on all of the merchandise, including the candles, including the Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces stuff. And it's good for every purchase. It's not just one time. It's not just on a certain amount. It's every purchase. So also, if you are a small business or a big business and you're looking for ways to get your content and your creative ideas out there, I'm also going to be adding, I'm going to be offering ad space. So send me an email at creepycases.spookyspaces@gmail.com and I can send you over all of the packages, that I have available. So without further ado, let's get started on today's episode. So 9 o'clock p.m., December 27th, 2011, Russ Feria leaves a friend's home in St. Louis, Missouri, after spending the evening at a weekly game night. Now, it's just another typical Tuesday, and he stopped on the way home to grab some Arby's for dinner and some dog food. He returned to his own home he shared with his wife and stepdaughters in Troy, Missouri, around 9:40 p.m. Now, what awaited him was your not-so-typical horrific scene. He found his wife, Betsy, dead. She was slumped up against the couch, covered in blood from more than 24 stab wounds, gashes up and down her arms, and a kitchen knife protruding out of her neck. He thought Betsy, who was terminally ill, suffering from breast cancer, had taken her own life. Now, as if the scene he walked into and losing the love of his life wasn't traumatic enough, things were about to get a lot worse for Russ. Now, despite his rock-solid alibi, Russ Feria was charged with murder, and he spent almost 4 years in prison while the justice system, the police, the prosecution, the jury, the judge, and his family continued to fail him. Now, it only took defense attorney Joel Schwartz a few hours to figure out who had most likely committed the murder. Now, this is the creepy case of Betsy Feria. March 24th, 1969, Elizabeth Betsy Meyer lived a simple life. Now, I couldn't find much information from her early life, which I hate to say it, but it kind of irks me because you know that I like to tell the victim's story. So many times we focus on the suspects and the murderers and the people who are harming when we should be telling the victim's stories. And I totally also understand, and I respect that maybe the family kind of wants to keep, you know, they want the essence of Betsy to themselves and they want privacy for them. But I would much rather tell that story and the suspects can just fade away. Now, Betsy had already had two daughters, Mariah and Leah, from a previous relationship when she met Russ Feria. He, still to this day, describes her as outgoing, she had beautiful eyes, a beautiful smile, and a bubbly personality, which is what drew him to her. He met her while she was working at a gas station, just a part-time job she took so she could focus more on her DJ business that was actually named Party Starters. Now, everyone said that this business name was perfect because Betsy was a party starter. Feria told NBC, quote, whether Betsy was working or not, she'd get everyone up, playing games, or she would get people dancing. That was just her personality. It was Betsy who asked Russ out first. He was a regular customer at the gas station, and Russ soon began helping Betsy with her business, and he used his computer experience to create a computerized playlist. Now, Russ and Betsy married in 2000 and lived in Troy, Missouri with their two daughters. They spent their free time going camping, going to the beach, spending time outdoors, and game nights. Betsy was one of those who loved being on the go. Now, she decided to return to the insurance field, a career that she had before she had met Russ, and she was hired on at a local State Farm office. Now, this is where Pam Hupp enters the story. Betsy actually trained Pam, who was a newcomer to the insurance field. Now, they had worked together for a few years, but they eventually lost touch. It wouldn't be until January 2010 when the women reconnected, when Betsy was diagnosed with breast cancer. Now, Pamela Newman was born October 10th, 1958. She grew up in Delwood, Missouri, attending Riverview Gardens High School. By the end of her senior year, she was already pregnant, and she ended up marrying the father of her child. Her friends said that this made her resentful of those who had gone on and gone to college, and the marriage only lasted 6 years before Pam divorced and married Mark Hupp. Now, in her younger adult years, Pam worked in life insurance as well, but she was actually fired on two occasions for forging signatures. Now, in 2001, Pam and Mark moved to Florida, then to O'Fallon, Missouri, where she worked at State Farm as an administrator while she flipped houses on the side. Manager Mike Beschert described her as positive, level-headed. He said she always saw the bigger picture and adapted to office politics easily. Now, by 2010, she was claiming disability for back, neck, and leg pain. Now, serious Pam, an outgoing party girl Betsy, although very different in personality, became really good friends. And Russ said Betsy would actually lean on Pam a little bit, who would take her to her chemotherapy sessions, and the women would go for walks while he was at work. Pam was always offering to help in any way she could. She became a trusted confidant and advisor for Betsy, finding out she was actually kind of worried that her daughters would not be financially taken care of after she passed away. Ken Meyer, Betsy's father, told St. Louis Magazine that Betsy confided in him she worried the girls would spend their inheritance foolishly and Russ would probably piss it away. He went on to say, Betsy asked him to come to one of her treatments, but they couldn't really talk about much because Pam was already there. Now, in 2011, Pam and Betsy actually collected money for a family impacted by cancer, and Betsy felt that this could be her legacy and something that she could leave behind in her, kind of as a memory of her. However, that family didn't know the money was being collected, and they never received it. And now Betsy didn't know this either. In November of 2011, the good news came along. It seemed Betsy had beaten cancer, so her and Russ planned a celebration of life cruise. Sadly, before they set sail, Betsy was informed that the cancer had returned and had actually spread to her liver and was terminal. She was given a 3 to 5 year life expectancy, and so the cruise actually turned into more of a family trip that her friends and family actually took. Not so much as a celebration of life, but, you know, just to still kind of celebrate everything. On December 22nd, unbeknownst to her family, Betsy actually made Pam the beneficiary to her $150,000 life insurance policy so that she could pass it to her daughters when they were old enough. Now, Russ explained, there were good days and there were bad days, and even though there were a lot of tears, Betsy relied on her positive attitude, wanting to live life while she could. She didn't want to be sad because she knew that she had a lot of sad days ahead. Only, Betsy's life would abruptly end on December 27th, 2011. Now, that day, Russ had texted Betsy around noon, telling her that he would pick her up from her mother's house later that night after his weekly game night. Betsy texted back, "Okay, great, honey." But later, Betsy texted Russ to say Pam had offered to bring her home, explaining that she offered and I accepted. Didn't get much sleep. Mom snored. Pam Hupp would be the last person confirmed to see Betsy Faria alive. Now, Russ went to work that day, then to his friend's house. He called Betsy on his way home around 9 p.m., but there was no answer. Now, he wasn't worried. She did mention that she was tired due to a low white blood cell count, so he didn't really think anything of it. Now, Russ returned home from his game night around 9:40 p.m. He walked in, called Betsy's name, still no answer. He had no sense that anything was wrong, thinking she was still asleep. He went into the garage to put away the dog food he purchased. Then he went into the living room. And that's when he found Betsy on the floor, slumped against the couch. Her wrists had been slashed, and she had gashes all over her, and a kitchen knife was still sticking out of her neck, while a second knife was found under the couch pillow. He collapsed next to her, trying to see if there was any sign of life. An autopsy revealed that Betsy was stabbed 55 times, including through her eye. Russ initially thought Betsy had committed suicide, which, so, I understand he was in shock, and I can't speak to the amount of shock or duress that your body and mind go into when finding your significant other stabbed to death, but I don't see why suicide in like such a gruesome manner would have been the first thing that popped into his mind. However, Betsy had threatened to kill herself in the past, and she was even hospitalized to make sure that she wasn't a danger to herself. Now, Russ called 911 and stated, quote, "My wife killed herself. She's got a knife in her neck and she slashed her wrist," end quote. Now, first responders arrived within 10 minutes and concluded that Betsy had been dead for at least an hour, maybe even longer. Now, they knew someone had murdered Betsy, and as police talked to her friend, Pam Hupp, they began to get an idea as to who it was. Police arrested Russ Feria on January 4th, 2012, the day after Betsy's funeral. He was charged with first-degree murder and armed criminal action. And authorities stated that his story that Betsy had killed herself was ludicrous. Now, a police search found a pair of bloodstained slippers in his closet, and they stated that his agitated emotional state was regarded suspicious. He was visibly upset, but had limited tears coming from his eyes, and he failed a lie detector test. Now, we all know how I feel about lie detector tests. They're not based on fact, they're based on emotion. And I can only imagine with the amount of emotions, the amount of stress, the amount of just everything that's happened, I can only imagine. I mean, you can't pass a lie detector test when you're under that much stress and just, you know, you've just been charged with murder. And what could you do? Now, when interviewed by police, Pam told them Russ had a violent temper. He was a heavy drinker, and he had even threatened Betsy, who had considered leaving him. Of course, this was named as part of his motive. She urged investigators to search Betsy's computer, where they found a note that indicated Betsy was afraid of Russ. Open and shut case, right? The picture of Russ painted by Pam was he was an aggressive spouse just out to get Betsy's money when she passed away. Sure. She became prosecutor's star witness at Russ's 2013 trial, despite his lawyer, Joel Schwartz, asking police to take a closer look at Pam herself as a potential suspect. He pointed out that four witnesses confirmed Russ's whereabouts for that night. His cell phone records also show he was a good 20 miles away at the time they stated that Betsy's time of death. He had receipts for Arby's. He had receipts for the dog food, along with surveillance footage that confirmed where he was around that time. His story was consistent, and he had everything to back it up. Now, there was no evidence of blood anywhere on Russ, no blood on his body, under his fingernails, his clothing, no blood evidence was found in the sinks or in the showers, no blood trails were found exiting the home, and for some odd reason, Betsy's time of death was all of a sudden changed as being between 7:20 and 9:41 p.m. The slippers were also claimed to be planted to frame Russ. Now, Pam, on the other hand, had no alibi, was literally at the home where the murder took place, refused to take a lie detector test, and her story changed multiple times. She originally claimed that she had dropped Betsy off at home. She didn't even get out of her car, which the two did call Pam's husband, Mark Hupp. There's a voicemail with Betsy saying, "Merry Christmas and Happy New Year." She claimed that at that point, Betsy got out of the car and went inside on her own. Then another interview, she said she did go inside, but just inside the front door to turn the light on because Betsy was feeling kind of tired. But then another interview had her claim that she had actually gone all the way into Betsy's bedroom to get her a blanket so she would be more comfortable out on the couch as she was tired. She also changed what car she saw in Betsy's driveway, basing it on whatever car she thought Russ was driving at the time. Despite these inconsistencies, police still zeroed in on Russ. Let me tell you what, this pisses me off so much. Totally understand. A big majority of cases, it's the spouse or the significant other, the boyfriend, the fiance, whatever. However, police need to start looking at evidence and piecing it together with the story. They don't need to take a story, create it, and then make evidence try to fit in that little imagination, because you'll see. Now, so prosecuting attorney Leah Askew countered that Russ's friends conspired with him and were providing a false alibi, held onto his cell phone, and posed as him to buy Arby's and dog food. This seems like a lot to help a man kill his wife. Even if you think you're getting a piece of that $150,000, I mean, you're not split however many ways they're trying to say. I think it was four witnesses that had him at the game night. So you mean to tell me you're going to split this money four ways, five ways? That's not that much. Now, when Schwartz deposed Pam in 2013, she made a joke that he found odd, stating her husband's life insurance policy is much bigger than Betsy's. Quote, "I mean, I guess if I wanted a lot of money, I could kill him instead of her." End quote. Now, at this time, no one had really outright accused her, so the comment was kind of even from more left field, because at the time that he was deposing her, she wasn't really a suspect. Now, he was wanting people to look at her as a suspect, but she didn't know that. Now, during the trial, Judge Christina Pinay Meyer refused to allow the defense to mention Pam as a possible suspect, even though there was significant evidence. She claimed there was no direct connection with Pam and the case. Now, okay, let me present to you. Cell phone records show that Pam was in the area up to 30 minutes after she claims to have dropped Betsy off. And at around 7:20 p.m., she texted home. Hupp was beneficiary to her life insurance policy, which they actually used this as a motive for Russ, stating that he was furious Betsy had changed her policy without his knowledge. Also, the $100,000 that Pam was supposed to put into a trust fund for Mariah and Leah, that never happened. And Pam claimed that she never told Betsy she would do it in the first place. I'm sorry, I don't understand why you think, or, you know, not why you think, but why you would say, oh, she just left me $150,000. Screw her husband, screw her kids. She left that money all to me. I never told her I was going to give her family anything. Please. Now, November 2013, Russ was found guilty on both charges. He was sentenced to life in prison plus 30 years without possibility of parole. He was sent to Jefferson City Correctional Center. And although prosecutors claim Russ's friends conspired and assisted in the murder, no charges were brought against them, and they didn't even know they were implicated until after they heard about it on the news. Now, if I were a prosecuting attorney, and I felt that there was this big conspiracy with all these players who helped set motion, helped commit a murder, helped hide this murder, helped conceal this fact, lied, I think I would be bringing charges upon everyone. Don't you? Now, Betsy's family was happy with the outcome. Her sister Jill had made claims that Russ had become outraged by the removal of his name from a separate insurance policy and that he had held a pillow over Betsy's face, stating, "This is what it feels like to die." Now, guess who told Jill that story? If you answered Pam Hupp, you'd be correct. Now, Russ held firm he was innocent, filing an appeal, which he was granted a retrial after a judge reviewed the case, calling Lincoln County's investigation rather disturbing. And I think that is the perfect way to describe it. Now, in the new trial, Hupp made claims that Russ had actually found she and Betsy were lovers, and that's why he killed his wife. Once again, changing her story. Other evidence brought out during his appeal was the document that Pam led them to on Betsy's computer, the one about how she feared Russ. It was found to be a Word 97 document, which Word 97 wasn't even installed on the laptop, and it was the only document to be from an unknown user. The slippers were assumed to be dipped in blood, not stepped in. The pattern just wasn't matching up to somebody who had walked through blood. Pam kept the money, claiming she never told Betsy she would give it to the girls, but like I said earlier, I really don't feel Betsy would have just given her $150,000 if she didn't think it was going to go to her girls. Leah Askew, prosecuting attorney in the first trial, she actually withheld that she was in a relationship with Mike Lang, who was a witness in the first trial and the captain of the original investigation. Now, I can only imagine the information he was passing along to her. Pam claimed that she saw Russ and another man on the side of the road. Yet again, story's changing. Now, after all of this, Russ Feria was acquitted and his previous conviction was overturned. He was released after serving 4 years in prison, and he actually ended up suing Lincoln County and won $2 million settlement, which he deserves every penny and more, because there's just something about the reputation that is now basically ruined, because sure, you've now proven that he didn't do it. However, people are always going to question, you know, I mean, people who don't really actually play into it or read into the facts and everything. In 2016, prosecutor Mike Wood began investigating Lincoln County for police and prosecutor misconduct in the original investigation. And in 2017, Judge Christina Penne Meyer was suspended for misconduct. Now, this was unrelated to Russ's trial, but if she was found to be doing something wrong in other cases, it wouldn't really surprise me if she was doing something wrong in Russ's case. Now, Joel Schwartz, I feel people should listen to this man more, said, quote unquote, "If Pam wasn't put behind bars, she would likely kill again," end quote. And Pam did just that. In August of 2016, Pam Hupp called 911, claiming she had shot an intruder in her home. Police arrived to find 33-year-old Louis Gumpenberger dead on her bedroom floor. She claimed that Louis had tried to kidnap her at knife point for Russ's money. Police found $900 and a very sloppily written note in his pocket that read, "Take Hupp back to the house. Get rid of her. Make look like Russ's wife. Make sure knife is sticking out of her neck." Now, when I saw this, obviously, I don't have it to show you, but there were typos, incorrect grammar, there's no capitalization. Knife is spelled N-I-F-E, just very sloppily written. Now let me tell you about Louis Gumpenberger. He was in a severe car accident that left him physically and mentally disabled. And his mother explained that he actually never left the house alone. Pam had actually lured Lewis to her home under the guise that she was a woman named Kathy. She was involved with a TV show, and she needed someone to reenact a 911 phone call that would be used on this show. Now, once again, those pesky cell phone records gave her away. They placed her at Lewis's very own home less than an hour before she shot him. And multiple witnesses also said that she offered them $900, how convenient of an amount, right, to do this scene, but they declined. Now, it's believed that Pam was trying to frame Russ, or may have been looking into taking the attention off of her involvement in the murder. And as there had been some heat on Hupp due to a civil suit brought against her by Mariah and Leah, alleging she had stolen Betsy's $150,000 payout. Despite telling the police she would give the money to the girls, the jury ruled she could actually keep it when she claimed she never promised she would give it to them in the first place. What the hell? Just seriously, what the hell is wrong with this county? Tell me you don't know how to do your job without telling me you don't know how to do your job. I just really don't see why Betsy would leave this woman her money without the idea it would go to her children, okay? Especially because she told multiple people she was so worried about them being taken care of. So August 23rd, 2016, Pam Hupp was arrested and charged with the murder of Lewis Gumpenberger. And although she claimed she killed him in self-defense, she tried to take her own life 2 days later with a pen. In 2019, she was sentenced to life without parole. In September 2020, Mark Hupp filed for divorce. In 2021, Pam Hupp was finally charged with Betsy Feria's murder. She claimed that she had only taken Betsy home that evening because Betsy insisted, saying she wasn't really familiar with the area, Pam that is, which, with the amount of times that she had visited Betsy, this is clearly a lie. Now, Pam's trial is still ongoing. A lot has happened within the time that she has kind of been fighting her case. So July 2021, she pleads not guilty. September 2021, the armed criminal action charges were dismissed. February 2022, her preliminary hearing is suspended due to her public defender having a heart attack. August 2022, she waived her right to a hearing. October 2022, her trial is moved to ensure a fair jury. October 2023. Now, there was a refile for the trial to be moved closer due to logistical reasons that I'm not really sure what those are. I couldn't find much on it, but like with ongoing cases like this, some of the information you can't really get because it's ongoing and some of the stuff is kept. So 2025 is when her trial has actually been set for, and they are seeking the death penalty in this case due to the heinous and depravity that Pam Hupp has exhibited. And I can definitely agree with that. This woman has shown no remorse, no kind of guilty feeling, just nothing. Just she is... whew. Now, the fatal shooting of Lewis Gumpenberger also prompted authorities to take another look into the 2013 death of Shirley Newman, Pam's mother, who fell from the balcony of her third-floor apartment. In 2013, it was ruled an accident, but in 2017, this was changed to undetermined. The autopsy showed she had 8 Ambien in her system, and at 5 p.m., Pam told the desk at the assisted living center her mother wouldn't be down for dinner nor breakfast the next day. And I don't understand, like, did no one find this odd? Like, did they not ask why? Did they not maybe want to check in on her mother? I mean, even if she's, maybe she's feeling under the weather. Okay, I get it. Maybe she's, you know, she's going to relax. But I feel like you would still want to send someone up and check on her. At 2:30 the next afternoon, Shirley was found by the housekeeper. The aluminum balcony railing was broken and she had fallen off. Now, Pam and her siblings were awarded quite a payout, and Hupp was heard saying, quote, "My mom's worth $500,000 that I get when she dies. If I really wanted that money, there was an easier way than trying to combat somebody that's physically stronger than me," end quote. Now, it seems Pam Hupp, this woman, Jesus, she likes to make comments about getting insurance policy money in any way she can. I mean, her husband, her mother, I mean, good heavens. And she was also fired for forging signatures more than once in her past jobs. So how do we know that all of these signatures were valid in the first place? Like, I know that, you know, they've come a long way and a lot of, you know, they double check things like that. But at the same time, how do we know that they were, like, they were legit, you know? So Mariah and Leah, Russ's stepdaughters, have grown up and are both living happy lives. They don't communicate with Russ, which I don't think I would want to communicate with someone who would so quickly turn their back on me with something like this. But they did apologize to him in 2021. Russ is also living a happy life, running a motorcycle business, and has a girlfriend. And he says that he has found peace and he is fine. Now, Pam Hupp, on the other hand, I guess it'll be a little over a year. Well, 2024 now. Well, I guess we'll find out next year what the fate of hers will be. But I can say that I definitely hope she gets what she deserves. And I'm pretty sure we can all agree and we all know what that is. So, on that note, I will see you next crime. Bye. Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces with Cassiopeia is a Pizza and Pigtails production. All episodes are researched, written, and edited by yours truly. You can find new episodes every Friday, with bonus episodes coming out every other Tuesday. You can find the podcast on your favorite listening platform, or now you can find it on YouTube as well. Don't forget to follow along on social media, creepycases.spookyspaces, for all future news, updates, and maybe some content that you won't find on the podcast. Also, be sure to subscribe so you can get access to bonus content, early access to content, and a couple of little thank you swag. If you'd like to contact me about appearing on a future episode, maybe you would like to suggest your own creepy case or spooky space, or maybe you'd also like to reach out about ad space, you can reach me directly at creepycases.spookyspaces@gmail.com, or feel free to reach out through those social media platforms as well. And, as always, see you next crime.